I think the most important one is always about what's going to impact that end user that has your equipment. And when a service incident happens, it's about how fast did you fix it and get them back up and running. So that, I think, resolution time is the most important when you're talking about a individual service incident. I know a lot of people have talked about first time fix rates, but with first time fix rate, if your response time to get out there is longer, that's still not solving the overall issue. So I mean, yeah, I got a 90% first time fix rate, but it takes me twice as long as the next guy to get out there. It's a different story. I think that total resolution time is the key for an individual service incident.
Hello, welcome to the Unscripted Podcast, where you'll find discussions on what matters most in service, leadership, and business transformation. I'm your host, Sarah Nicastro. Let's jump in.
Today, we're going to be talking about taking a data-driven approach to field service success. I'm excited to welcome to the podcast today, Ken Marsh, who is the manager of national service at Marmon Food Service Technologies. Ken, welcome to the Future of Field Service podcast.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So before we get into talking about data, tell everyone a little bit more about yourself, your background, your role, and a little bit more about Marmon and what you all do.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in the Chicago area. I grew up with family-owned business. My parents owned a business. And of course, when you have that, you start working at an earlier age than most people. So, but it did help me learn about a lot of intricacies of small business and all the different aspects that go into running a business. Mm-hmm. I do feel it did help me out as I've grown in life and grown in my different roles within the company. And then when I got into the industry I'm in now, which is in the food equipment area, I started off with TurboChef right after I got started with Subway. So at the time when they were kicking off the $5 subs and toasting subs, TurboChef was that oven. So it really was a small company at first and really grew into a large company. It was fun to be a part of that. And then after changes there, I moved on to Rationale Cooking Systems, German-owned company, which learning a lot about processes and just how well a business can be ran, just as most people think about German engineering.
Yeah.
There is a process to everything, mm-hmm. So which is good. I mean, it really puts some structure there for a lot of people. And then after Rationale, I moved on to Marmon Food Service, where we have a couple different brands underneath of our umbrella that range from food equipment to also beverage equipment and display technologies, getting in there. And at Marmon Food Service, I, as you said, manager of national service. So I support and overseeing the warranty process and then also our field support of the third-party service agents. We work with 100% third-party service agents across North America and across the globe.
Great. I'm curious, if you don't mind sharing, what industry was the family business in?
It was signs, but outdoor electric signs.
Okay.
But we did... It was one thing you had to be adaptive because in the Chicago area at the time, our biggest client was the First Chicago Bank, First National Bank. It changed its name, I think, a total of 8 times in 5 years. So, which is great as a sign company.
Right. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
To change all their sign. So, but it really opened up other things because we were willing to be adaptive with them. We got into the first touchscreen banking system for them. Worked with Microsoft at the time for the first touchscreen software that they had back in the mid-90s. So it was fun to be a part of that. And we would do things from large-scale 50-foot tall signs to learning how to build a indestructible pen retractor for the kiosk there. So it was all over the board for that.
Very cool. But I mean, there's lessons there in service today as well, right? Which is if you want to continue to grow and expand, you need to be adaptable in understanding customer needs and finding new and different ways to meet those. So yep. I can see how that experience would be helpful too. Okay. So I've probably shared this on the podcast before, but one of the things that I really enjoy about doing this is having my discovery calls with people who are going to come on the show. A lot of times people say, well, what topic do you want me to speak to? Or how do you decide what topics to cover? And I think really the value of this podcast is rooted in me not being prescriptive with what people come and discuss, but rather trying to get to know them a bit and understand what is their sort of area they're passionate about or area of expertise, et cetera. And so for you, it was data, which anyone that knows me knows is not mine. But that's good because it's obviously an incredibly important topic in terms of driving service success and clarity in roles and expectations of outcomes, et cetera. So even though I'm not one to delve into it often, I certainly acknowledge the value of it. From a big picture perspective, Ken, why do you feel data is so critically important for service organizations today?
One of the big things I find that data helps out with is giving you focus, because it can help you pinpoint kind of where your biggest impact issues are or where you have the most room for improvement as well. I think data can help you, like, give you that focus of saying, okay, this is where we need to start looking. And from once so you get that started, you can dive into the data deeper, but I think it can help you give, like, your starting points as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sort of there's baselining, right, of how are we performing? What does success look like? And then to your point, there's that visibility of where are we hitting those benchmarks? Where are we falling short? And where we're falling short, what's that telling us? What's the opportunity? What's the challenge? What do we need to overcome? What do we need to do differently, et cetera? So can you talk a little bit about any best practices you could share on, as a service leader, making data useful to drive business intelligence and drive performance? Because one of the things that I think has happened from a data perspective is when I started in this space, it was, you need to collect data, right? Now, everyone's doing that. But yeah. I think where some folks struggle is still, how do we make the best use of it? What data is the right data? And how do we use that data alongside other tools and processes and leadership skills to have the impact we wanted to have on the performance and service? So what best practices do you have on how you make data work for you?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you can get lost in data very easily by going after so many different ones. I think one of the good starting point is also to come up with a problem statement or understand, and as all companies are, they're revenue driven. Mm-hmm. They want to know what's making it work and what's not making it work. So, I mean, you can start off with where the math problem is and then start driving into that. I do feel like if you don't know what your problem is, and that for a lot of companies is a struggle for them to truly define what their problem is. It's good to start off with like a questionnaire or a survey, like an NPS style survey, and which at the end of it is about the data. And it's because you're wanting to keep it clear and concise of who's in the tens and who's in the fives and who's in the twos for your NPS. And then that can lead you into asking more questions of, okay, well, why did you score us that way? Well, what could we do to improve that score? And I think that right there helps you give your problem statement. And then you start tying your KPIs or your different data points that are affecting that score. So you're taking that kind of personal touch of a question and trying to tie the KPI to understand how you can improve that customer relation or business partner relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. So there's a lot of people that I think get into looking at data for data's sake, right? And kind of nerding out, if you will, on the vast opportunity of data you can collect and what can it tell you and what contributes to this and what drives this. Like you said, it's sort of infinite really in what you can look at and how. But I like what you said about the way to not only make it purposeful, but maybe have the biggest impact is to make it personal. So I think that idea of tying it to, not even tying it to, but starting with what's the problem, what's the challenge, what's the opportunity, what can data tell us about this, right? Versus we have all of this data, what's it saying? That's when I think it gets overwhelming because it's just sort of a minefield of you can get lost in every which thing if you keep the frame of, okay, these are my objectives, these are our goals, my problems are X. So how can I bring in data to help me understand this problem better, to help me understand how I might be able to do better?
Yeah, that I do feel one of the things, there are people that love to use data just for data purposes. I think where it's the biggest impact is where you can tell a story.
Yeah.
Of kind of where you were, where you are now, and where you want to be. And a lot of manufacturing companies, a lot of other companies want to talk about lean manufacturing, lean processes. And the same idea behind lean is a lot of people also know the Mamba mentality from Kobe Bryant of just 1% better every day.
Mm-hmm.
Both are with that same idea. And I think that's where if you start off with a focus and understanding of what your problem is, it's coming to that agreement internally and externally with your partners of what can we do better tomorrow that we aren't doing today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where data can start telling that story, because there's so many people have said it in different ways, but if you're not measuring it, you can't improve it.
Yeah. So it's interesting though, because now you're starting to speak my language, which is storytelling. Okay. And I didn't imagine we would get here, but there's this quote that I've used in a lot of different presentations before that says, if history were taught in stories, it would never be forgotten. And so to me, stories are what ground us as humans in understanding, in purpose, right? In motivation. And so I like this idea of, you know, I would not say data is the story. I would say, though, that data helps you tell the story. And so I really like that point. And I think maybe if we thought of it from that perspective a bit more, we can start to see how we can make it personal to people, how we can use it not to be punitive or not to be negative, right? Because it's not always about these are the metrics, we're not hitting them, or these are your metrics, you're not hitting them. It's about using it as a form of understanding and then using it to create that story of purpose, right? Here's what we could do differently. Here's, let's understand the data is telling us that we're having a challenge here. Let's understand that. And let's talk about how we create a solution. And let's then look at how that story progresses. If we make these changes, what happens next? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think, as a good book, I mean, you start with the main plot and that's your main KPI. But as you improve it, you get better at understanding of what's affecting it. And I think that's where you get into your subplots and deeper dives into the KPIs. Because as you, I look at things in the Pareto fashion of like, what's the biggest impact? So when you address that biggest thing, okay, what's the sub things that are affecting it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not always going to be the same category. It's maybe going to be four or five categories of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a Pareto within a Pareto of understanding that. So you're trying to really, truly tell the story of what's impacting. And it's not just service that can use this. I mean, there's other, the Pareto fashion works in so many different parts of the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that's where it comes to also being able to use data to help understand root cause, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sort of what you're saying. We have this, but then we dig deeper until we sort out where is the root cause of the problem or the opportunity, if you will. But I think particularly when we think about in-service using data to drive performance, again, I feel like maybe sort of the historical manner is more in a punitive sense. Here are your KPIs. Here's what you're measured against. If you don't hit these, that's a problem.
Right.
Where instead, if we can say, okay, these are the KPIs. If you're not hitting one, let's dig in a layer deeper and a layer deeper and a layer deeper until we understand what is that root cause. And then let's solve that problem together. And then let's celebrate the success that comes from then seeing that represented in the data in achieving that KPI. Yeah. So I like this because it's tying the value of data into concepts like storytelling and leadership, et cetera. So, all right, then let's talk about, from a service perspective, what do you feel are the most important KPIs to track in today's landscape?
I think the most important one is always about what's going to impact that end user that has your equipment. And when a service incident happens, it's about how fast did you fix it and get them back up and running. So that, I think, resolution time is the most important when you're talking about a individual service incident. I know a lot of people have talked about first-time fix rates, but with first-time fix rate, if your response time to get out there is longer,
right,
that's still not solving the overall issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, yeah, I got a 90% first-time fix rate, but it takes me twice as long as the next guy to get out there. It's a different story.
Yeah,
I think that total resolution time is the key for an individual service incident. But I think one of the other things is looking at bigger picture when you're dealing with larger customers that have multiple pieces of your equipment or multiple locations. They're going to want to look at what your total cost of ownership is and also how many calls per unit per year are you looking at? I mean, so where they can help tell the story to their management or to their franchisees, depending on what group, of why we chose this piece of equipment, because that's what's going to impact them year over year, is that cost of ownership and how many times do you have a service incident or along that way.
Yeah. And that too could be different depending on what industry, what company, what service model, right? So that could be based in number of issues resolved. It could also be based on uptime. It could be based on output. It could be based on quantifying the value to their business, right?
Right.
So depending on sort of how you're looking at the service you provide, whether it's more of a traditional model or more of an outcomes-based model, the way you articulate the value to the customer could be different. But I think that's a good point.
Yeah. And I know with total cost of ownership also includes like planned maintenance or preventative maintenance, depending on which way people look at it. And just like with the car industries, when you have service, they have their planned maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is meant to be preventative in that planned maintenance, but it doesn't 100% prevent. So it's the same with any other piece of equipment. You're going to want planned maintenance to help out with it. But if your planned maintenance is so expensive because of the how the equipment was engineered, and it's not worth the cost of the equipment, then you run into other issues from the standpoint of the site.
Right. Any others?
Those are the main KPIs, I think, that are affecting. I mean, yeah, once you get into like the resolution time, you start looking at your response times and parts availability and what parts are affecting that.
What about NPS?
I think that's always key as a company as a whole to always get that anecdotal information back from customers. It's one, it can tell you, are you telling the right story along the way? So did you make the right corrections? So, I mean, it, as most large companies do, they take an internal survey to see how they're faring with their own employees. And we should also do that as external, making sure we're getting touch points and information from our customers, not only just like end user customers, but any vendors along the way. Because if you're a better partner with the people that you're contracting with, buying parts from, contracting service with, they're going to make it easier for you to do business with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel it's a two-way conversation with you and not just always in one way, it just makes a better partnership and makes it easier to do business with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about, so I guess that was the other one I was going to sort of ask about is employee engagement.
Just how surveys or like data can be used with that.
Yeah. So is that something that you are tracking within Marmon, employee engagement?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we do annual employee engagement survey, but then also we do touch points throughout the year just to verify did we make the right changes? Are we interacting with the right people? Are we getting the strides? I mean, and just with, KPIs, when you're trying to improve service, I think it's important with employees that you're not trying to fix everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yes, you can only do, I mean, you want to be able to address one to two, maybe even three things and make sure you're improving on those.
Mm-hmm.
And then drive into the next one of like, okay, what can we improve next?
Right.
But yeah, employee survey is definitely needed no matter the size of the organization to me. I've dealt with a lot of small companies from the service side, and they may not think of it that way. And some managers or owners do it automatically.
They think about
their employees, and maybe not as official as like, here's the true survey, but they sit down and actually listen.
Yeah.
I think it's critical no matter what size of company.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned working with contract service technicians. Is there anything specific you look at because that's your model versus having W-2 technicians?
I think one of the key things that I keep in mind is, okay, yeah, from the service standpoint and their performance, I think it's the same as a W-2, an employee of like, okay, what is their usage rate? How often are you using them? What is their response time? Is resolution time? But I think the other part of it is that you don't think about with the W-2 is how fast do you pay them? Because it's at the end of the day, it's about money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can show them that one, you're paying them on time and that maybe even paying them faster than what your agreement states, I think it shows a good partnership in that way. So it's not so much for a KPI for them. It's a KPI internally that I build a better partnership.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Is there anything you would say are common missteps in using data effectively to drive strategy, decision-making, performance? Where do you think people tend to go wrong?
I think they try and get into the weeds too much. And it's very easy to do. I've raised my hand. I've done it many of times where I'm like, oh, I can go down this rabbit hole. I can go down this rabbit hole. Let's try and fix all this all at once. Yes, that is one. And I think the next one is really looking for perfection right out of the bat and not trying to find those 1% incremental improvements. It's trying to make a process or trying to make the customer 100% happy tomorrow. It's not going to happen. But I think that's where going back to telling a story and making sure the customer is involved with your improvements. People are going to buy in and back you if you make them a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where if you try and just keep it internally and just try and go after too many things and make it perfection out of the bat, you'll never reach perfection.
Yeah.
My favorite hobby is golfing. And even a professional golfer will say, even on your best day, you're not perfect. But you're better than you were yesterday. So that's the thing, is just finding out what you can do better and making that customer experience and partnership experience better.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think keeping it digestible, keeping it simple, and mastering a few things at a time, like you said, is good. Without that aim of perfection, but mastering to the extent of feeling like you have a good handle on it, feeling like you're where you want to be, and before you go and focus on something else, that makes sense. So we know data can also be incredibly valuable externally from a customer standpoint. Do you see yourself or companies in service making the most of that potential?
Yes and no. I think there's always ways to improve it,
mm-hmm.
making it simpler or easier to get to. Sometimes systems are the issue to where it's just you can't get to the data you want to, or is hiding the true issue because you can't get to the information. And a lot of that because of service, the good things that you can learn from to make improvements are getting the feedback from the technician that's doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that out of the technician, either verbally or written, mm-hmm. is sometimes hard because they're in their field. They like, because they are very technical, they love to work with their hands, and maybe their verbal and written skills aren't to the level that you need to get a full picture or understanding of what you need to address. I think that's where a lot of like the new softwares and AI is coming in and using that speech recognition and putting that in, looking for keywords can help out to drive better understanding of what's happening in the field.
Yeah. I think too, with customers, it's comes back to the idea of customer listening and understanding what's important. Some customers will want more detail in a certain area. Others want more peace of mind. So it's more right. of an awareness, but not necessarily all of the specifics. But I think it's also interesting for companies across industries to be considering how data plays a role in the value proposition and what that looks like and how it could expand or grow over time, because there is just a ton of potential to use that as a way to build the relationship with customers, to build that trusted advisor status, to potentially increase revenue, those sorts of things. So again, that varies a lot from industry to industry, company to company, but we do have to think about data not only in how we improve internally and drive our business performance, but how it might be seen as a value proposition with customers.
For sure. I mean, one, the price of the equipment can drive how much resources you can put into it. I mean, mm-hmm. from automotive to medical equipment to large-scale CNC machines, there are hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment in mm-hmm. there, and they're able to put a lot more just resources into it to be able to get that data out of it, to understand their planned maintenance or preventative maintenance, or even where they on with a lot of them is predictive maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to where they can say, all right, this motor has gone through a million revolutions and we know that it fails at 1,000,005. Mm-hmm. So we need to get it replaced before that. And if we can do that now and we can go in there with the right parts, get it done and over with, rather than all of a sudden it's happening in the middle of a production run or mm-hmm. your highest performance area time. And now you can get that done at an off-peak time and save the customer money.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned AI, and I wanted to ask, when you think about the potential that exists with AI to take the data we already have and layer on more intelligence, bring to light more automation, what do you think is most exciting that we may see over the next couple of years?
It's exciting and not exciting at the same time, I think, is the part of it, because...
So tell me both sides.
Yeah. The exciting part is, yes, we're going to learn more and it's going to be more automated and we're going to be able to get into the details that we just weren't able to before because of that AI technology and understanding to be able to compute numbers and words faster and better than we ever could before. The other key part of it that I tell myself internally and also tell teammates is we still need a personal touch to it.
Mm-hmm.
You still need to tell that story that goes along with it. If you just rely on the AI system, whatever you use, it's not going to have that personal touch with customers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that personal touch will continue to kind of deplete a little bit. I can see that. But me personally, I still love that personal touch.
Yeah.
And I feel other people, even the younger generations, yes, they love the technology, but they want to be recognized. They want to have that personal touch from other people.
Yeah.
Maybe it's in a different format than what I feel today or want today, but I think it's still a personal touch that we look for.
I agree. And for me, again, maybe it's just that my opinion is similar to yours. I don't see the need for that going away. I think what's really exciting about AI and the role that it can play in data-driven success is you mentioned how much knowledge lives with a technician, and it can be hard to get them to relay that, whether that's through a verbal download or through accurate reporting, et cetera. I see that as one area of knowledge management, if you will, where AI can make that process so much less cumbersome for the frontline worker in a way that allows the business to have the benefit of their knowledge without making it something that's incredibly time-consuming and taxing for them on top of the work they just did all day. So that's one example where I think making knowledge more accessible and democratizing that through teams and even customers to be able to have knowledge bases where you can easily find what you're looking for and you can not only capture, but share that knowledge well. The other is, you mentioned a couple times, predictive capabilities and the way that AI can help us for the businesses that aren't doing predictive get closer to that is also really exciting, because whether you use that internally to simply drive your own operational intelligence and execution, knowing, hey, this AI tool is telling us that we're going to reach failure on this part in X amount of time, or whether you turn that into a new offering with your customers, I mean, that's up to you. But those are some of the capabilities that I think really augment the value that service organizations are already working toward without taking away from the value of the role of the frontline worker or the value of those human relationships. I think I get excited about how it can complement that and how it can allow people to spend more time on people things and less time on documenting or filling out forms and stuff like that. I think that's exciting.
And I think with that, I mean, it also frees up your people to, there's always going to be exceptions. So it frees up your people to understand those exceptions. Where with AI and data-driven systems, they can get rid of, I mean, or process the majority of information that is meets the mold. And then it's like, okay, now I can actually pay attention to those exceptions and figure out what went wrong or what did we do right to where we can improve the mold to expand even further from that.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to figure out with the wave AI yet, but I like to remain cautiously optimistic and think about more so the additional capability it can bring. I think really it's how it allows you to get so much more value out of the data you have versus necessarily infringing on any of the human-centric value. So,
I think one of to go along with that is the old adage of trust but verify. I think it is. You're going to have to trust the AI that it is doing that. It's verifying it along the way to make sure it's still pointing you in the right direction or telling the right story.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Ken, any other comments, words of wisdom, advice, thoughts on data-driven success?
I think the big thing, I mean, you always will need support of people and systems. And I think it's as I feel like the theme of our talk has been is making sure you're telling that story. Is don't forget to tell the story along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the story is the most important piece, and how data can support that and how data can direct that and add the detail to it is a really good way to position that. So I didn't know that's where we would end up in this conversation, but I really like it. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights about something that you're passionate about. So thank you for spending some time with me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You can find more by visiting us at futureoffieldservice.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the Future of Field Service Insider so that you can get the latest content delivered to your inbox once a month. The Future of Field Service podcast is published in partnership with IFS. You can learn more at ifs.com. As always, thanks for listening.